The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
So this is just an informal opportunity to talk about health law opportunities and courses here at WCL. I'm Professor Wiley, for those who I don't know already. I teach the health law survey course, and I also teach a seminar on public health law, which will start actually in an hour in this room. I'm also joined by Professor Stuart Silverman, who coaches our health law regulatory and compliance competition team. The team won first place in a national competition this spring, which we were really excited about. And he's here to answer questions about that opportunity, if you have any. And maybe you can say a little about the timing of that for next fall.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, of course, I'm delighted to have the opportunity to head up the endeavor to prepare the law student team here for the competition, which took place on February 21 in Baltimore. It was a national competition. I don't know how many of you are familiar with it, but I think it was the fourth or fifth year of the competition. And we had a team of three students on the team plus an alternate prepare for the competition. Of course, we took first place. And we started preparing for this. Hi, Mohammed. Here's our alternate for our competition team. We started preparing for this effort in November of last year. We started much earlier than we usually started for these things, this type of prep. I've been involved in preparing the students for a couple of years, maybe 3 years now, for this type of competition. It's called the Health Law Regulatory and Compliance Competition, sponsored by the University of Maryland and the Carey School of Law specifically. And so we decided to start early, much earlier than we usually do back. So we started in November, as I said, basically with about three separate prep sessions in November dealing with substantive law issues, such as the False Claims Act, anti-kickback statute, and the Stark Law. Those were all substantive type lectures for the team. And then we took a break for December because the students had their exams to study for, and of course there was the semester break, and so we reconvened around the second week of January. And then we went from that point all the way up literally to the Wednesday night before the actual competition meeting, having separate prep sessions, meetings. Most of the prep sessions in January through February were focused on hypotheticals, not so much substantive law areas, but hypotheticals, giving out fact patterns to the student team, and getting them used to essentially presenting positions, various positions. Either they adopted the position of a government prosecutor, or they adopted the position of a law firm hired by a corporation to address some very serious compliance and regulatory issues in the healthcare law arena. And I must say the students worked very hard. I'm very impressed with the students here, very bright. They were very professional at the competition, and they knew their stuff. And it was quite clear, I was able to observe their presentations at the competition. We had two presentations for them to do on the day of the competition. They were very poised, they were very professional, and the judges were quite impressed. And so all that effort put into the preparation and the various prep sessions really, really paid off. And so we're going to try to duplicate that effort. I'm happy to return as head coach for the team. Thank you very much. I'm happy to return for this new year, and so we'll be starting up in November again. But we do want to identify students who might be interested in joining the team and representing the law school at the competition. And for that endeavor, We probably will want to start early September. And so if you think you're interested in doing something like this, that please, I encourage you to contact me. I'll give you my contact information, if you will, or you can contact Professor Wiley, Lindsay Wiley, rather. And, you know, I encourage you to think about it and you know, be serious about it and apply. My contact information is, and I'll give you my personal email address. It's sisilverman@aol.com. That's sisilverman@aol.com. And simply indicate in the subject line, competition, simple. And I'll know what that message is about. And Professor Wiley as well, if you want to contact Professor Wiley and indicate your interest, that would be great too. It's a wonderful experience, not only for the school and the health law program here, but also for the students. And I think if you talk to the students who went to the competition, Muhammad is here as being one of the students as our alternate, they'll tell you it was a really great experience for them, and also career-wise and professionally, it's going to benefit them greatly. I want to thank Sam in particular for Sam's personal help with me in scheduling a lot of the prep sessions, and even early on giving me advice as to who the students might be that would want to compete. So Sam, you were really invaluable, and I want to thank you personally for that. Any questions?
I wanted to make sure that Professor Silverman had a chance to talk about the competition team early on, because he's made time in his busy workday to be here. But maybe we can take a step back now and say a little bit about health law more broadly. I see some 1L familiar faces and some who I don't know as well as some of the leaders from our student health law organizations who have come to let themselves be here, be available as a resource to 1Ls as well. To talk about those opportunities. The competition team is a chance to really do some in-depth study and practice-oriented experience in a particular area of health law, focused primarily on fraud and abuse law. And so that's an area where there's a lot of hiring. That's a real growth area for health law right now. On the enforcement side, working with government agencies at the federal level or at the state level, as Professor Silverman does with the D.C. government, or in private practice, representing healthcare providers who are seeking advice about maintaining compliance with fraud and abuse laws, or handling enforcement actions. So that's a really important area to explore if you're interested in representing healthcare providers, again, because it's a big growth area for employment opportunities. So it's a sub-area of health law, but it's one of the really important ones that we focus on in our curriculum. There's a course called Fraud and Abuse offered in the fall by the Professors Kung. It's a married couple, Chrissy and Derek Kung, who teach the course together, and that'll be this fall. The other course that's in sort of a specialty area of health law, but one that we really emphasize, particularly for those who are interested in representing healthcare providers, as well as for those interested in representing healthcare payers, meaning health insurance plans, is the privacy, health information privacy course, which is offered in the spring. So those two courses are the ones that I particularly emphasize, in addition to the survey course, as being important ones to keep your eye on. If you're interested in domestic healthcare oriented law. The survey course is going to be offered in the fall next year. It's 4 credits, so it does take up a significant chunk of your fall enrollment, and something to maybe plan around if that's something that you're planning to take.
I might add, if you don't mind, mm-hmm, that sure. There's also, this year, there was a heavy emphasis on FDA, mm-hmm, food drug law. Very heavy emphasis. And so I don't know where you are in your course curriculum and your choices of courses, but clearly FDA is important, food drug law is important, as well as what Professor Riley had just indicated, Professor Wiley had indicated the importance of fraud and abuse, and the survey course clearly that Professor Wiley teaches. So, you know, if you don't think you're prepared this time around, maybe next year. Mm-hmm. There's always next year to consider as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. And I'm glad that you mentioned food and drug law. The competition, the focus, the substantive focus of it changes slightly from year to year. So this past year, they indicated that food and drug would be a big emphasis of the competition. We also here at WCL, we combine food and drug law with health law for the purposes of career advising and curriculum planning. So for food and drug law, there's going to be a slight change next year. Professor Grossman, my understanding, at least at this point, is that he's going to offer his advanced food and drug law writing seminar, which is one of the only sort of beyond the basic food and drug law courses, one of the only courses that we have in food and drug in the spring semester rather than in the fall semester as he has in the past. So on the food and drug side, I suspect those of you, maybe we can do a quick show of hands. I know faces, but for Professor Silverman, how many are 1Ls in the room? Great. And 2Ls? And 3Ls? Great. So those of you who are 1Ls, we can all have the 2Ls and 3Ls introduce themselves to you as well before we finish up. How many of those of you who are 1Ls, how many are in the food and drug elective right now? Okay, great. So if you're not taking the food and drug elective right now, there's also a basic food and drug law course that's offered in the spring semester as well. So your 2L year, you can take the basic food and drug law course. And then if you're interested in exploring that further, then in your 3L year, you could take the advanced writing seminar that Professor Grossman offers as well. And another area that sort of bridges the two, and this gives us a chance to talk a little bit about the Summer Institute, there's a pharmaceuticals and the law intensive course that's going to be offered this summer. So in addition to our fall courses and spring courses, we have what's called the Summer Institute for 1 week at the end of June. And the courses for that this year are going to be pharmaceuticals and the law, which is a nice overview of some food and drug law concepts, but also some intellectual property and some other sort of a broad overview of all of the regulatory areas that are of interest to attorneys representing the pharmaceutical industry. There's also going to be a healthcare fraud and abuse course, an intensive version, just a one-credit version offered this summer. Healthcare mergers and acquisitions, which is sort of transactional law, but focused specifically on the healthcare context. And then healthcare technology, which is a new course that's being offered. I believe that course is going to have a focus on electronic health records in particular, but I'm not certain. If you're interested in any of those opportunities, Professor Asha Shelzo is organizing the Summer Institute this year, and her email address is absciielzo, that's absciielzo @gmail.com. So if you're interested in one of those four one-credit intensive courses offered during a week at the end of June, you can email her, or you can email me if you didn't get the email address.
Do you know
when
the deadline is for signing up?
I'm not sure. I believe that you can sign up right until the last minute. In the past, that's been the case. And the classes are going to be the week of June 22nd. So I think you can even sign up, potentially even the morning of the course, although you risk the class being full if that's the case. Any other questions about the Summer Institute? Yeah, Gabe.
Yeah, we got an email from Gene Jaffe earlier this morning outlining what it was. And on the Summer said, prospective classes, and they're pretty much what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know if that's the most current schedule is available?
That's what I've been told. Professor Shelzo emailed me this morning and said those are the four classes. The only one that I don't have any information on is the healthcare technology, because that's a new one. The other three have been offered in the past when I was directly organizing the Summer Institute, so I know those well. And that's what she knew as of this morning. I don't know that she knows the dates and times yet. I think she's still working with the adjunct faculty who teach the courses to get that organized. But feel free to email me or Professor Shelzo or both with any follow-up questions. I know she's hoping to have the full schedule, you know, with dates and times up very soon so that people can plan around that. And I know it can be tricky in terms of thinking about how to organize that with a summer job that you might be committed to for the summer. If you have a health law related employer, they're often very open to having you take a couple of days to do a course. Even if it's not a health law related employer, often they're open to that if you talk to them early. So I know getting that schedule up is a top priority for her so folks can plan around it. Those one credit courses are a really nice way to get some specialty health law courses on your transcript without having to devote a lot of credits to it, so that you can leave room for other courses as well. One question that I get a lot is about sort of how to balance specialty health law courses or specialty courses in any area with kind of the basics that, most law students want to take in their 2L and 3L year. Actually, the American Health Lawyers Association did a big survey of health law employers over the last couple of years, and the results of that indicate that employers are particularly interested in some of those basic courses in addition to specialty health law courses. So they want you to have a sense for how the industry works, and that's something that you really get out of the survey course as well as some of the specialty courses. But they also want you to have basics like administrative law, business associations, tax can be very important in some areas. For some employers or for some clients, for example, nonprofit hospitals might be interested in seeing something like nonprofit law on your resume. Nonprofit organizations who do advocacy work might also be interested in something like that. Antitrust can be really important, particularly for healthcare providers who are organized in complex ways. The Affordable Care Act incentivizes a lot of healthcare providers to form accountable care organizations, and those run into some significant antitrust issues. So basic antitrust law can be useful. So far, we've really been focusing on healthcare law, sort of the law with, that governs relationships among healthcare providers and patients and the payers, public programs and private health insurance companies. We also have some courses outside of healthcare law that I can talk about. One is the public health law course that I teach in the spring, a seminar that you can take for 2 or for 3 credits. We're also, I'm very excited to be bringing back an international health law course this fall, so that's focused predominantly on health and human rights, but also global health law more broadly, and that's going to be offered in the fall. And then bioethics sort of bridges the two. So bioethics is mostly healthcare focused and focused on medical technologies, but has a slightly different emphasis to it. That's going to be offered in the fall. So that's a nice accessible course as a first sort of way to get your foot in the water, toe in the water, it's foot in the door, right? To get your toe in the water with respect to health law without knowing if it's something that you don't have a lot of experience with beforehand. Yeah.
One other course I want to add, ERISA Employment Benefit Law is a class that has a significant health portion. I'm taking that, it's offered in the spring, so I'm taking that currently. A lot of the cases we read are cases where an employer has offered health care for their employees, and there is a coverage dispute that's brought under the big ERISA statute, which was originally intended for other things, but it's being used to shield sort of the employers from that. So a lot of the emphasis is on wellness programs or employer-funded health care. So that is not within the sort of offered within the health field, but it is very health focused, and I think it really helps.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a course that if you're coming at it from a health angle, I would generally recommend that you do that after the survey course, the health law survey course, so that you have a sense for how it, what the connection is to health law.
Without that, you wouldn't understand sort of the basic structure of ERISA. We covered that very well in
It's everyone's favorite part of the survey course, ERISA, right?
I might also add, being on the outside, so to speak, I've heard more than a few people mention that there are jobs in the ERISA field.
Mm-hmm.
So, jobs, ERISA.
Absolutely. ERISA has to do with employee benefit health insurance plans, right? And that's how most people get their health insurance in the U.S. And it's a really complex area of law. Most ERISA practitioners really come at it after being sort of tax practitioners. It's kind of a specialty tax area for a lot of people. But it's a really important area for health law as well. It's not the easiest, most accessible area of health law, but if you know it and know it well, you're a really desirable commodity on the job market at that point, because it is so specialized and so arcane.
Yeah, it's difficult because it brings in tax, employment, and health, three substantive areas together.
Yeah, yeah. Are there? So I can give you the basic breakdown of the courses. So that you have a sense, at least as it now stands, and some of the scheduling is still being finalized even up until next Monday. Tuesday is the first day that anybody will be signing up for courses. In the fall, we have the health law survey course for 4 credits, which I'll be teaching. We have bioethics with Professor Gertner, which I believe is 2 credits. Is that right? Is anybody here taking it? I think it's 2. I should have written that down.
I thought it was 3.
Is it three? It's three credits. and then the fraud and abuse course, which is three credits with the Kungs. And then health and human rights, which I think is, it has a different title. It's something like international health, international human rights and global health or something like that. But
do you know
health
who
and
is
human
Christina?
Rights. That's Christina Liria, who has worked with the Pan American Health Organization in the past. She's really fantastic. She brings in, she knows a lot of people in the health and human rights world, so she brings in some really fantastic guest speakers as well. Our current plans for spring, although this is more tentative, include the privacy course. This past year, that was a privacy and compliance combined. Next year, we're not sure whether it'll still be privacy and compliance combined or back to just a standard privacy course, but that's health information privacy, which is a really important area. The food and drug law survey course will be in the spring. The food and drug law advanced writing seminar should be in the spring. The public health law seminar for two or three credits. And then medical liability, which for those of you who have looked at past years, in the past that's been offered in the fall, but it's switching to spring for next year. So if you don't see it on the fall schedule, that's only because we've shifted it to the spring to balance things out a little better.
And do we have medical liability Professor
Bertram? Yeah, that's a really fantastic adjunct. I don't know if anybody in the room has taken that class before, but she's really wonderful and just a leading practitioner. She's done defense side in-house and now does plaintiff side medical malpractice and has a really strong emphasis on kind of building a skill set in that area. So that's a great course to consider as well. One that is not currently on the schedule, but we're waiting to hear from the adjuncts about their availability, is the healthcare legislative and regulatory process course, which is a sort of advanced administrative law course with a focus on, even though food and drug isn't the title, it's both healthcare law and food and drug law, with two really wonderful adjuncts who are unfortunately very busy right now, and they're still trying to get a sense for whether they can teach it this next year. If not, then it would be offered the following year. So you can keep, those of you who are 1Ls can keep an eye on that for the next year.
What does that cover? Just sorry to interrupt you, because that's a new field.
Yeah, so that's more in the administrative law area. Okay. And again, I think for those, particularly for those who are interested in healthcare access and health policy, administrative law is a hugely important course to take, the basic admin law course, and then this class as well. So if you're interested in government affairs or interested in doing health policy work, it's a really good foundation for that. The adjuncts are also really well connected, and they've done a lot to help students, connect students to internship and externship opportunities and job interviews. But it is unfortunate that the demands on their time are really intense. They both worked on the Hill on some really important pieces of health legislation, including aspects of the Affordable Care Act. Now one of them has moved into private practice. The other is still working with the Senate Help Committee. And so that's something to keep an eye on. We're hoping to hear back from them before Tuesday when everybody starts enrolling. One possibility is that we would shift it to the spring if they're not available for fall. The other possibility would be that it will be offered, not offered next year, but offered the following year. Or it may be that they can offer it this fall. So those are the basic courses for the spring and fall. I've mentioned the Summer Institute courses as well. Does anybody have questions about course selection before we talk about some of the student organizations? Yeah.
How many of those courses require some sort of prerequisite? Like, is there an order that you have to go in?
We've been really reluctant to impose actual prerequisites, so there aren't, but that doesn't mean there's not sort of recommendations about what you should do. So we didn't want to make things too rigid. We wanted to give everybody the flexibility to take them in whatever order makes sense for you. In general, I think that the survey course is helpful to have either concurrently with fraud and abuse and privacy or prior to taking fraud and abuse and privacy. The survey course kind of gives you the context in which to situate those two courses. Bioethics is, I think, totally accessible even without any previous background. Those of you who have taken it, is that your sense?
I haven't taken the course. I've
yeah. Okay.
Last year
okay, right.
But, I had general background, and it was really easy, like, going through the lecture.
Right, right. The health and human rights course doesn't have any particular connection to the survey course, so that's accessible. It would probably be very useful to have public international law before you took that, but again, it's not a prerequisite. So you can take them in whatever order. It's generally helpful to take the survey course first if you can, but it's not necessary, and you can also do them concurrently. Yeah.
The food and drug writing.
Right, seminar,
right.
Seminar after the-
exactly. The advanced food and drug writing seminar, you have to have the either the 1L elective or the regular food and drug spring course before, and it can't be concurrent either. Is that right? I think that's my understanding.
Yeah. And you can also take a FDA class on campus, on the main campus. There are there was someone who also who took a similar fee.
I'm not sure whether that's going to be an option next year because that's somebody with a joint appointment, and I'm not sure what the status is for that next year. But the regular food and drug course would be offered in the spring, and then you could take the advanced writing seminar after that. Thanks for the reminder about that. Any other questions about course selection? Yeah, Sydney?
Are your summer courses available if we're like already participating in a different summer program?
Yeah, that's not a problem. There is a maximum, is it 6 credits, 7, that you can enroll in for the full summer. But other than that maximum and other than, you know, actual scheduling conflicts, it's not a problem.
And just so Anna and I could come up, but to get your loans for the summer, you need to take a minimum of 6 credits. So usually actually those 1 credit classes help because you can take a couple of those if you're already taking it.
Plus a full semester or summer course. Yeah, and definitely talk. I don't know all the intricacies of how to balance the financial aid stuff, but there are definitely a lot of considerations there in terms of striking the right balance.
There's like a deadline coming up for if you want to take classes in the summer and get
for financial aid.
Financial
yep.
aid deadline for that.
Yep. Any other questions about courses? No? So let's talk a little bit about maybe the students who are here who are involved in some of the student organizations can introduce themselves and say a little bit about their involvement in those organizations. Start with our senior members.
Okay. So I'm Will McIntyre. I'm a 3L. I'm an outgoing president of the Health Law and Justice Society and also co-editor-in-chief with Sam of the Health Law and Policy Brief. I still say a little bit about the society, so Sam can give you the brief. The two have certainly overlapping members. There's a lot of us that sort of wear different hats in the two organizations. We've had largely divergent sort of commissions. The society, for the most part, sticks itself to running events. And we've got primarily career-oriented events. I don't know if any of you were able to attend the speed networking event we had last week or the week before that. And then we also do sort of more substantive legal sort of, you know, learning opportunities. For example, on Thursday, we're having a symposium sort of on either side of lunch or around lunch, 11 to 1:30, on the King v. Burwell case that the Supreme Court heard about a month ago with major implications for the Affordable Care Act.
And for how the survey course works.
And for how the survey course works, right? Mr. Wiley will be there, waited, bated breath to see what the result is. There are lots of tax implications, too. It's pretty sophisticated, but it's an important case, probably, to sort of have a grasp on. So that's sort of how we operate. We have a fairly small board, but then we're always looking for people who want to add, who can, you know, participate without massive time commitments. You know, I was looking for people to help, you know, make flyers, distribute flyers, contact. We're always having events that involve contacting practitioners, which is never a bad thing to be doing. It's always good to have a reason to email someone that you can then later talk to and, you know, about internships or jobs or whatever. So I would say, you know, at this point, our board is set for the next year, but, you know, at the beginning of the fall, look out if you're not already involved for, there'll be calls for getting involved in terms of staff positions. Hannah can be involved. Shruti is the incoming president. But, yeah, keep that in mind. Sorry.
I'm Sam Beadle. I'm co-editor-in-chief with Will of the Health Law Policy Brief. And we also both did the competition last year. And I also get involved with the society sometimes. I'd say overall, you know, first and foremost, we're a publication. So we're in the process of transitioning to electronic issues only and no longer printing hardcover books, which is going to be a great thing, I think, in getting more practitioners to kind of use our articles. As well, we maintain a blog where it's updated at least twice a month, sometimes more frequently, on more think that a lot of the crossover between the student organizations involved in healthcare has resulted in a lot of mentoring opportunities. And so I know that Will and I both like kind of have gotten to know a lot of the 2Ls, and we keep in touch with a lot of our alumni about, you know, potential internships and employment. And so I think no matter whether we decide to get involved in the society or the brief, it's great because you can kind of join as you feel like you want to get involved, and also take on as much as you want to. So there's a lot of opportunity to, you know, take initiative, but also if you have a lot of other commitments, you can kind of, you know, coordinate part of your time to get involved in things like a civil event or something. So definitely, if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out. We also just set our board for next year, and Muhammad's going to be taking over, so we're really excited about that. But we never turn down staff members, and we're always looking for bloggers. So any interest, please feel free to email any of us. We're happy to get involved.
Blogging is a great way to sort of force yourself to keep current with you know, issues, whether the issues before the courts, or, you know, issues coming out of the agencies, or things like that. So that's, I think, a really great way to really stay very up on what's happening in the industry.
Shruti, do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Shruti. I'm 2L, and I will be kind of the health facility, and I'm a blogger for the brief, and they both have been really great experiences. I've been able to meet more practitioners and make more professional contacts, and blog really is a great way to get published and keep abreast of the law. And the blogs are pretty short, just 600 words, so it's not a huge time commitment like a 40-page comment or something. So I'm more interested in food and drug law, so if you guys have any interest in that, I'd be more interested.
And Mohammed?
Hi, everyone. I'm happy to see some faces from some of our members currently at the brief. As Sam and Shruti mentioned, we do have some positions for bloggers and senior bloggers, so it's a, you know, minimum time commitment. You can balance it with your other commitments. So we are hoping that more of you will join us. We also have opening for a social media marketing director, so if any of you are interested, please let us know. I think that I'm also a staff on the society. I think that my involvement in these two organizations really helped me not only in terms of networking, but also in terms of focusing on what I want to produce as my writing sample. That'll be something big for you after your 1L year when you start thinking about jobs and or clerkships. I'm currently in the process of applying to clerkships, which have really early deadlines. Some of the federal ones, you know, they start your second semester, the beginning of your second semester of 2L year. So like your first semester of 2L year, you have to have all of the things together to start. For some of the federal ones, some of the state ones, it's sort of towards the spring and summer. So by that point, they'll be looking at, you know, your 1L grades and your writing samples. So you gotta start thinking about writing samples. Also, networking, I think it was very helpful to meet people in the fields that I was interested in pursuing. I was able to do to meet several people, and I established sort of like an Excel database of people that I met, you know, contacts, keeping up to date, and then did sort of information interviews with these people from time to time, and sort of quarterly update them on what I'm doing. I think that's a really great way to establish a network, especially here in DC, where a lot of the healthcare practitioners sort of know each other. So if you meet someone and you might not be interested in foreign abuse, but you might be more interested in the FDA stuff, they might know someone who, you know, they can direct you to someone else to meet. So it's really important to establish a network early on during your law school career for jobs, and I think being part of these two organizations really helps with that.
Can I do one quick plug? Just thinking when Muhammad was speaking, both student organizations also sponsor students who are interested to go to conferences that are local, either in DC or Baltimore. So it's another great thing that we offer to students who are really interested in career in health law, so you could go and mingle with, you know, practitioners. And usually we also know someone that's going, like Professor Shelzo frequently goes to these things and offers to introduce students to practitioners, and so we've had the opportunity to meet a lot of practitioners that way. And then the last thing is just that I know that all of you are going to be attending the symposium on Thursday. So they have been mentioning doing kind of a guest blog post. So if you have any interest in doing a blog post about the symposium, please get in touch with us, one of us, and it's like guaranteed that it'll go up on the site. And you'll have something about TeamView Farewell that you can talk to employers about. So that'd be great.
Yeah, and I'll just say to wrap up, we have the two established student organizations, the Health Law and Policy Brief and the Health Law and Justice Society, and then we have the competition team, Healthcare Regulatory and Compliance Competition Team. And that is both an opportunity to earn independent study credit and functions also like a student organization in terms of building your resume. Finally, there's the, I hope, is everyone here signed up for the faculty practice group? Do you get random emails from me about jobs? And the 1Ls are now getting those, even though you weren't after you first signed up, which was terrible. We're like single-handedly responsible, this practice group, for bringing to the attention of the entire school that the sign-up for 1Ls didn't actually work. So I'm glad that that's worked out. So those are the things that you can do right now. You can sign up for, make sure you're signed up for the faculty practice group, for career information and events, the Student Health Law and Justice Society, and the Health Law and Policy Brief, and think about and look out for an announcement in the fall about trying out for the competition team as well. As 1Ls, it may make the most sense for you to sort of initially get a feel for the competition team maybe as an alternate in your 2L year and then compete. It's only a 3-student team. Compete as a full-fledged team member in your 3L year, which is a great way to kind of build that experience. With all of this, I think the goal is, there's sort of a short-term goal and a long-term goal. For me, my primary advice to those of you interested in health law is, in terms of that long-term goal about getting a full-time position after law school, to really think about a short-term goal about getting really fantastic internships and externships on your resume as a student. And being in law school here in DC gives you opportunities and more opportunities to do that than students who are in law school in other places. So whereas, you know, any law student in the country can come here for the summer, we have students like Will has done just a ridiculous number of internships and externships at this point, because you have, you know, each semester and the summer to take advantage of those opportunities. Those internships and externships are really fantastic opportunities, but they are in themselves very competitive. And so kind of the step before those internships and externships during your 1L year is to start to build a resume that says that you're interested in health law. Health law, along with a few other areas like IP, has become, you know, the word is out that this is an area with jobs. And so students are flooding in to apply for those positions. What sets you apart is if you can show that you really have a demonstrated interest and experience in this area, because more and more there are applicants looking at those health law positions who don't have that demonstrated experience. And although, you know, grades always matter, and generally esteemed opportunities like the flagship law review matter in any position, In a health law job, employers will sometimes take the student, the applicant, who has that demonstrated interest over a student who has just kind of the what's called best athlete application, you know, just sort of the highest grades and the kind of generally esteemed accolades on their resume. So demonstrating that interest is really important. And the ways to do that very easily, really, are to be involved in some of these student health law organizations and to get some of the specialized courses on your transcript right off the bat, including through the Summer Institute, which is a great way, you know, even your first summer, to start to get some of the specialized courses.
I just wanted to echo what Professor Wiley just indicated, because from my perspective, what I've seen, you know, so forth, my own experience professionally, I think you really increase your credibility if you're serious about the healthcare field, to demonstrate your commitment and extensive interest, serious interest, by doing these various activities, because it does make a big difference to prospective employers, and you almost have to live it, really, to be quite frank with you. And that's not really going to be too much different from an experience you'll face in a law firm or any other type of professional position you may have. And, you know, you, of course, the grades are important, naturally. The trick is time management, and if you don't know much about time management now, you'll probably want to learn about it real quickly, because in any kind of position you have when you leave law school, a great deal will involve how well you're able to manage your time, because your time is going to be at a premium and you're going to be involved in many different things. And so the more you can get involved personally in these various activities, I echo Professor Wiley's view, the better it is, the better you can, pardon the word, sell, the better you can sell yourself, market, that's a better word, that's cleaner, that's market, the better way you can market yourself out there. So keep that in mind.
I just wanted to add something to the point about internships in D.C. I was earlier today at an event hosted by WCL alumnus, the chief circuit judge of the Federal Circuit, Circuit Judge Sharon Prost, and she was explaining that we really are sitting on sort of like a treasure being in D.C. because it is the heart of the health law world. I mean, you have FDA, CMS, you know, you have NIH, you have, you know, IRS for ERISA, you have all the different agencies here. You have some of the biggest law firms that practice in the some related fields here. So if you're not taking advantage of being here in D.C. and not, you know, not doing those internships or seeking them, you're really missing out, because this is part of the value you're getting by coming to WCL. So definitely take advantage.
Any questions about how to balance? Or, yeah, sure.
I just wanted to add one more thing. Sam was talking about mentoring, and any of you guys should feel free to reach out to any of us. I know I've reached out to Will and Sam more times than they probably would like, and they have given me a lot of advice, and I've had the opportunity to learn about internships they've done, and I've gotten really great internships just at their advice.
I want to echo that I mentor for ADVANCE, which is one of the student organizations that does mentoring, so I'd be happy to mentor as well.
Yeah, and definitely reach out, especially with internships. Like, even if you don't know where to apply, definitely reach out. But also, if you get something and you want a feel for like what the work is really like, just message one of us, because more likely than not, we've had WCL students there, and we can, you know, tap our resources and see who's been there and connect you with the right people. And that usually builds a really good relationship, not only for you, but then in the future when other WCL students want to intern in those places. So.
It's a very close-knit community. I'm sure you can sense that already. Any questions about how to balance the different kind of things that are going to be competing for your time over the next couple of years? I know it can seem a little overwhelming, especially over this couple of weeks where you're kind of hearing about so many different things that you can get involved in. The answer is you basically just don't sleep or have a personal life. But then you get a job in which you don't sleep or have a personal life. No, that's not really true. You should maintain other interests and get sleep, too, in theory. Everybody's good? So you can email me anytime. My office hours are open, and they're Tuesdays from 3:30 to 4:30 this semester. But if that timing doesn't work for you, just send me an email, and we can set up a phone call or another time to meet. I'm happy to work with any of you one-on-one about career advising, or connect you to students who have done work in the area that you're interested in. For food and drug law, Professor Grossman was sorry that he couldn't make it today, but it sounds like most of you have already connected with him. If you haven't, reach out soon. He's a really great resource and very well connected in food and drug law as well. I work closely with all of the student organizations that we've talked about today, so I can help you think about what your role might be in any of those. I know some of you have already signed up for various positions in those, which is great. Thank you for coming by.